And was Miranda going to join us?
Yep, Miranda's with us as well. Sorry.
Okay.
So we have our DEI projects represented as well.
Hi, Michael. It's Miranda. Is Dave on? I'm wondering if he's connected. I let Mira know that the Blackboard is not on my working on my computer, so I'm just phoning in.
Why don't we get started, and maybe some others will join us, but appreciate those who have joined. This is our tie-in with the Onondaga Pathways to Careers Demonstration Project at OCC, and maybe we can just do quick introductions, and then we'll turn to the agenda. I heard Mira representing Burton Blatt Institute and Syracuse University and the OCC project, and I heard Miranda, which represents the DEI training and TA team, but you're also, I think, talking about the work being done in South Dakota, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And who joined from Kentucky?
We have Helga.
Hi, I'm here. I stepped away.
Okay.
I'm part of a tour group right now, but this is Helga, and I am Office for the Blind, and Voc Rehab is also part of our project.
Okay. And who joined from Georgia? Georgia?
Good afternoon. It's good to be here. We have Greg Schmieg, our Executive Director of GVRA, Lori Tootin, the Assistant Director of Transition, Rita Young, our project manager, and myself, Dale Arnold, Director of Transition Services.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks for joining. Did anyone else join? Is that a new?
David Mayer.
New oh, great. Thanks, David. Okay. Before I turn to Mira, with reviewing some of the information we collected on the subject today of retention. Again, just in general, say that this is an effort to bridge across multiple funders, both from Department of Labor and Department of Education, that are creating through demonstration projects, better understanding and awareness of strategies that can make career pathways more inclusive, and appreciate everyone who has set the time aside today. Let me turn to Mira, who can walk us through some of the slides, understanding better about retention issues globally or nationally, and then look at some of the strategies which are being identified before we turn to some of you individually to share your own approaches that are emerging within your own projects. So, Mira, let me turn to you.
Sure, thanks. Forward a few slides. So, yeah, on our current slide, what you see are retention statistics, national retention statistics, and I just wanted to put these forward to be able to demonstrate how they vary according to institution type, because I know that, we have a variety of programs that are joining us, some like OCC are exclusively at a community college, but some of the other agencies are developing pathways and programs that may reach across to other types of institutions. And I think what we can see by looking at this is that, you know, retention isn't necessarily all that high, and it can get quite low when we're talking about part-time students, when it seems to get lower when we're looking at open admissions programs. So those are just some of the things that we can take into consideration when we're developing these career pathway programs, is what is the type of educational institution that we're working with. And of course, one can dig into these statistics further, and I'm always happy to support providing more information as needed, but it certainly also will vary according to the circumstances of the student and their characteristics. But at a high level, institutionally, you know, these numbers show that really there's a good amount of work to be done when it comes to retention. That will be important if we want to get our students out into the workforce and their chosen pathways. Moving forward, looking at the literature and the research and the practice out there, there is quite a lot of information, quite a lot of theory and evidence-based principles and practice relating to retention strategies in higher education generally. A lot of the research that's been done has broken up the reasons for low retention into both academic factors and non-academic factors. Academically speaking, of course, they just find that your past academic performance is an excellent predictor of your future academic performance. But looking at other structures, we know we can improve it when we focus on you know, supports that we provide to students. So looking at the non-academic factors, the level of a student's commitment or motivation, their academic confidence and self-esteem, and their academic skills, these are malleable factors. These are things that with the right supports and with training and assistance, we can improve those factors, and then we can improve retention. Things that are really important, and I think will come into play with our work, the level of perceived institutional social support. That's going to be a theme throughout what we talk about today, are that strategies to provide support to the students, and when they feel supported, that is going to make a difference. As well as, of course, the connectedness to the higher education environment. So it shouldn't be that they're just disconnected from campus, coming for classes, and disengaged from the faculty, from the advising, and from their peers, or from other activities, or it will be easier for them to disconnect from the pathway. Looking at national practice, there are several evidence-based practices that have been promulgated and researched and continue to be practiced at institutions. First-year seminars are becoming particularly popular. I believe they're at about 95% of the four-year colleges will now institute these, and they just provide a regularized, consistent opportunity for first-year students to meet with professors and to meet with peers and to learn about how to navigate the higher education environment. Learning communities are another example of bringing students together. It has been found that writing intensive courses are practices that are high impact and can support retention. Collaborative assignments and projects, which again bring the students together. Engaging students in undergraduate research and diversity or global types of learning experiences, service and community-based learning experiences, again adds to the academic experience that they're having and makes them feel connected to something broader and makes them feel connected to, quote-unquote, the real world, if you will, which I think, again, for our particular work is going to be important because they are going to be students focused on a career pathway, on getting out there and being successful. Internships is another thing that's a good high-impact practice and gets students, particularly in our pathways, right moving down that pathway and remembering why their academic connectedness and success will relate to them being successful in the employment field they choose. And then having capstone courses or projects has also been found to be a high impact practice at universities and colleges. Again, because I know that OCC, our sponsor for this community of practice, and they're helping us understand what they're doing, they're a community college, and I know there are other community colleges that are being targeted by our programs. There are strategies there as well. This slide really focuses on the supports, ancillary supports to the academic environment that they're providing. So looking at expanding out-of-class support, tutoring through peer mentors, as well as potentially professional mentors, can be really high-impact practices. Increasing the use of Learning Center services by reminding students that they are available. Integrating career and academic advising, again, something really important for putting students on those career pathways and making sure that they are doing the right coursework, the right preparation. Improving their student orientation so that the first-year students aren't just coming into classes but not understanding how to navigate the rest of the university or college environment. Some community colleges have gone so far as to mandate that orientation be face-to-face, at least in its beginning, and advising sessions so that a rapport is developed and there is connectedness between the student and their advisor. Setting up an early alert system and student coaching systems, that's something I know OCC is engaged in, and they'll be telling us a little bit about that moving forward in the remainder of the presentation. And indeed, they have created tools to do this that we'll be able to see. And then creating some system, maybe creating an online tool that a student can use to help them map out their course selection and their progress to graduation so they don't, as we know can all too often happen, wind up in their last year and discover they didn't take one class that they needed to be able to get their degree or certificate, but now they're at a place in their life where it might be very difficult to invest that time or that money to do so. So this keeps them moving forward in a targeted way and not dropping the ball on anything. As you know from our emails, we've posted some resources to our website, and one of those is a Pathways to Careers Toolkit. This isn't necessarily focused on just individuals with disabilities. This is at large thinking about pathways to careers, but I think we'll find that these practices can be very useful for us as well. So one of the things that they mention are to have flexible delivery methods, offering non-semester-based classes, alternative times for your classes, alternative places for your classes, including potentially at work sites. Thinking about our pathways where we have very narrow and defined pathways and key employers that are hiring in those pathways, this may be something that we can think about designing into our programs. Offering credit for prior learning, or in some cases I have seen prior practice and prior experience, work-based experience, that can often count for academic credit. Providing flexibility around course completion when unforeseen barriers come up with certain disabilities that may have a remitting and then a sort of a reappearing factor, this could be something that's very important. Certainly providing accommodations for individuals with disabilities. That goes without saying across the board, particularly for our programs. Developing alternative options, web-based training for those who may have odd work schedules and are trying to fit this in or just be unable to transport themselves to the site of the higher education community, the college or the university as it might be. And developing mobile training sites in rural areas. So for those of us that are making sure to include rural sites as part of our programs, that could be something that is really important, or perhaps developing partnerships with libraries and others to provide that training in those kinds of sites. Another thing that was mentioned as important is case management. So directing and managing a student's participation in the program, and this will often include activities such as recruitment, retention, that's what we're talking about today, program component navigation, life skill or life issue assistance, academic career and personal counseling, financial aid guidance, and other supportive services. Clearly, outside of just taking one's class, there is so much more that a student has to be able to navigate and to do, and having someone providing case management as through the VR, or even having that position be integrated within the academic environment as OCC is doing with a variety of advisors, this could be a good approach to take. And then, of course, there are academic support services that can be very useful. Providing the opportunity to participate in groups, I mentioned this earlier, learning communities, they're interacting with each other. Providing assistance with study skills, test strategies, note-taking, time management, these aren't skills that students are often coming
Jay Harrison.
To. Hi, Jay. These aren't things that students are necessarily always coming to the secondary environment with, and it really helps to provide them. Providing career-specific courses for individuals who need language assistance, providing for arranging tutors, learning labs, one-on-one tutoring, even computer-based tutoring could be very useful. Making sure that there are dropout prevention strategies. Again, I think, you know, that early alert system, which we'll hear some from OCC about, can be very useful. And again, providing accommodations for an individual with disability. So even though this toolkit wasn't targeted, they are mindful of that issue. So moving forward, I've mentioned that OPC, or OCC, this is their Onondaga Pathways to Careers project, they have a few different strategies which help them to know in advance when it looks like a student might be at risk for dropping out and to provide supports that may be able to prevent that from happening. We have William and Dean and Jay on the line with us today, so I'll ask that one of them help us understand these. And if you need us to move the slides forward, just shout and we'll take care of that for you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I apologize because I'm actually called in and I don't have the PowerPoint in front of me. I do have the slides, so I'll be reading directly from the slides. But my name is Jay Harrison. I am the employment coordinator for the OPC project. And my role is primarily to make sure that students get the career support services they need during their last year at OCC and afterwards, hopefully successfully guide them into a career or helping them advance into a four-year institute. So two programs we use, one is a retention alert system we have, and that system allows professors to address concerns they may have with students with us, or even not all negative, sometimes there are positive responses that we get, let us know how well a student's doing in class. So the retention system is more of a progress report than it is really making us aware of any behavior or academic problems that the students may have or the concerns the professors may have. And we receive these reports during the third and sixth week of the school semester. And we kind of serve as that middle person because it is a one-way communication system, meaning that the faculty communicate to us their concerns. We don't communicate to faculty about all concerns we may have. That's done more on an individual basis rather than a system created for that. But we do have a system in place that allows anyone to address concerns, and I'll talk about that later on. So it's, again, a way to monitor students' progress. It allows us to really catch, give us an early warning or give us, bring to our attention things that may be struggling with the students during the third to sixth week of classes. And each case owner reaches out to the students once we receive the report just to give them an update of, how they're doing in classes, what the professors say may be concerns, or let them share with them how the professors think they're doing great in class. And what we try to do with OPC is try to schedule our meetings with students around this so that we're intentionally meeting students during these periods, as well as having an open schedule for follow-up after those individual meetings. I'm sorry, if I'm going too fast, let me know. Hello?
Nope, you're doing great. Just let us know when you want us to move to the next slide.
Yeah, so I'm going to go to the next slide.
Okay.
And the next slide is an example of what a student progress report looks like once we receive it. It has a student's ID number, name, the term, the class, the professor's name, and the case owner. And The case owners are, well, right now the case owners are support services. So students who are in a support service program, like an EOP, education opportunity, counselors receive these reports. We also have coaches who have student athletes that receive these reports because students are eligible because of their GPA. That's monitored by the coaches as well. So those are the people that receive these reports. And on those reports, it could be areas of concerns, like attendance, lack of participation, test scores, or any other concerns they may have. And a good thing about the system is it just doesn't report the concerns. It also allows faculty to give us, you know, suggestions or recommendations for students, like having the student see the instructor or having the student attend tutoring sessions or math and writing support. And then below that bot is additional comments. And this is an area where it allows faculty to really just address their concerns in a brief paragraph and let us know what are the concerns. And it can be concerns that can range from a student missing homework assignments, or it can be a concern where a student's behavior seems erratic. So it can vary from academic to behavior. And it can also be concerned about a student's well-being. Let's say a student is normally cheerful in class, but has become very isolated and quiet and doesn't seem as attentive as they were in the beginning of the class. That may be a concern the professor brings to our attention that allows us to work with the students one-on-one and hopefully be able to address these concerns so that students can do very well in those classes. And again, this system is not all negative. We do get positive reports about a student doing really good. After the third week report, the six-week report can show that a student was missing assignments, but then the six-week report can really say that the student has done well, the student has all the assignments up to date. So it's also a little bit, like I said, it's a progress report, more of a early detection system. All right? So with the next slide, again, that system is really faculty-driven, so the faculties will bring their concerns to us. We don't bring the concerns to them. But we have a system on campus called WeCare, which allows anybody at OCC to really submit a concern about a student's well-being, and that can be academic and behavior as well. And this system is head by a committee that reviews each cases. And once they review the cases, they notify the student, and they work with the student to address those issues. So if we go to the next slide, this is what a WeCare reporting form would look like. And as you can see, it has all the different categories of concerns that you can use to help address the student that has an issue. And I should also mention that a student is also able to follow WeCare report form. They would just have to notify staff, or it can be done anonymously as well, so that student doesn't have to identify themselves in care of feeling like they're getting their fellow classmates in trouble. So once the form is filled out and we receive the concern, it goes in front of a committee where the committee decides on how to address that issue with the student.
Jay, can I jump in real quick? Okay.
Yeah,
Richard Dean from OPC at Undyke Community College. So WeCare is akin to a behavioral intervention team that a lot of campuses have. So that might be more familiar to folks that are listening in. Jay talked about the committee. This committee meets once a week. So every Monday they get together and able to discuss students of concern. And in our case, Nancy Carr, the Director of Accessibility Resources at OCC, is kind of the liaison for OPC on the WeCare committee. Sorry, I just wanted to put that in there.
Oh, great, thank you. So on the next slide, there's some of the referrals we make for our students. We at OPC, we realize that enable for our students that have academic career success, we have to assist them with eliminating barriers and identifying barriers. And we work with a lot of partners to help us with that. We work with SSVR, financial aid department on campus. We also have a food pantry. We have food bank representative that comes to campus every Tuesday to help students apply for SNAP. If eligible, we have a counseling center. So we really use these systems to really make sure that we're focusing on the whole well-being of our students and, you know, just ensuring that whatever barriers that they may have, you know, we acknowledge those, we help them acknowledge them, and we work together to overcome them. So that's a little brief description of how we use these two systems to help us with retention. We feel that once we can help students eliminate these barriers and these struggles they may have, it allows them to be able to focus more on the academics.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Dean. That was great. Clearly, I mean, you know, I really do see that you have connected well with a lot of the research and the evidence-based practices that are talked about nationally. It looks like you're implementing them across the board. And I like the way you framed it when you said you're really interested in the student's whole well-being. I think that's what it comes down to, is targeting someone as a whole person and being able to support them across the board. And then, like you said, then they'll do better at their academic program. Any questions or thoughts for discussion before we move on to our next group?
Yeah, I just had a question about the WeCare reporting. How many reports typically are you generating in a week or a month? Is this something that's like an exclusive last resort? Is this something that happens frequently?
Yes, so I don't have the exact numbers. Nancy Carl, who's the director of the all office, would have the exact number. But in terms of the use of it, I mean, it's something that anybody at OTC can use, and it's really more of an early detection system, like really to catch students who are, you know, well, allow staff to really help students they may have concern about. It can range from, again, academics to behavior to emotional issues that a staff may have a concern, and it goes in front of the committee for review. So it doesn't have to be something that's like dire that we feel like needs immediate need. It can be something whereas a student stops showing up in class one day.
Right.
And this is a student who regularly attends, and someone has a concern. That could be a faculty, that could be a classmate, or that can be somebody that student may walk by the hallway and say hi every morning to. So it really ranges in terms of the immediacy of how of the situation, but I can't answer any numbers questions because I don't have that information. I'm sorry.
And the committee is.
But in terms of its effectiveness, I mean, this early intervention, students. If you have an issue and the committee recommends that you meet with the student, then and maybe there's a referral that is pretty effective in preventing more difficult issues that might occur later on.
Yes, I can speak to a student that was in our program. So this student, there was a WE report filled out for the student. With the concern of hygiene. So the person filed a report, it went in front of the committee, and the committee brought the student in and found out that there was problems at home. And we all know that things like that can impact, you know, students' focus and on academics. So with that being said, there were referrals made for this student to go to the food pantry to get food because they found out that was a concern. There was also a referral made to student housing to see if we can get that student out of that situation he was in and move him on campus. And with those referrals, this student moved on to campus in the spring, has done a lot better academically, and a lot of those issues seem to have been addressed because of that one concern of a student's hygiene that led into discovering a lot of other things.
that's a great example. Thank you.
Yeah, and the committee is a really strong cross-section of people across campus. So campus security is on the committee, our VP for student engagement and learning support is on the committee, Nancy Carr for accessibility resources, athletics. So it really serves as a catch-all for students.
I see a question from Pam typed into our chat box. It's wondering if the We Care report is for all students. So this is not just an OPC. This is campus-wide, right?
Correct.
That's correct. It's for all students.
Okie doke. Move forward then. And learn a little bit about Georgia's approach. And Pam, if you wouldn't mind sharing this with folks, and I know we have a lot of folks from Georgia with us as well, so if they want to speak to any of these, I know these are the practices and approaches you're building into your program, and I think they're the ones that will help support your retention efforts.
Thanks, Mary. This is Pam Williamson. I am with Burton Blatt Institute's office in Atlanta and with the director of the Southeast ADA Center. And I have the privilege of working with the wonderful folks at Georgia Vocational Rehabilitation. So folks, if I miss anything along the way today, feel free to chime in because I am merely the voice for the work that you're doing. But E3 stands for Explore, Engage, Employ. And Georgia is almost a year in to their demonstration grant project. So we are actually working with them, and they're building in retention strategies and looking at what to do as they get into the school systems and launch the program. Now, one of the things that that they are going to be doing is they're going to be looking at using the SAMHSA, or the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration Toolkit, with evidence-based practices on supported education, and they're going to be using that to be able to help inform some of the work that they're doing. They're also looking at doing strengths-based case management, both working within their system of vocational rehabilitation, and they have dedicated people that will be working in various regions throughout our state, and then also they will be working in collaboration with the educators and administrators and others in the school system. Georgia Vote Rehab has been very fortunate to secure great partnerships across our state with various school districts, and they are strong, and I believe will only continue to get stronger. In addition to that, they're going to be doing customized apprenticeships and paid internships. This is going to help build the relationships within the community. And as we all know, the more support we can get behind our students, the better off they're going to be when they're making these transitions from high school into post-secondary ed or employment. And these are going to be things that help to retain these students, help them to stay in school. Also, too, doing active engagement of parents and families via focus groups, and also including parents, families, students, and other interested parties on an advisory group that, if I'm remembering correctly, is launched or almost launched. And that group will be informing the team as we move through the next 4 years together in order to make sure that we're staying on track and that we are meeting the needs of the students as well as the school districts. And then also, too, we're going to be developing, or actually are developing, a student and parent advocacy training. There's going to be a train-the-trainer model so that students are actually hearing from they're trusted from those that they trust, and also parents and others will hear from those that they trust. And it's going to address multiple issues, self-advocacy, some of the soft skills in communication and other areas that employers often tell us that they want to see more of, and also issues surrounding the Americans with Disabilities Act and how that applies in daily life at school, in the community, and in employment. So Dale or Lori, Rita, did I miss anything, or is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Okay, here we go.
Thank you so much. I'm here with Greg Schmid, Dale Arnold, and Lori Tootin. Thank you for representing us so well. I think that was a really thorough overview of the project and where we are so far.
All right. Did y'all hear that? Does anybody have any questions for us?
This is Michael Morris. And one question would be, I guess a part of retention is also maybe the flip side is the front end, which has to do with the screening of students as they come into the program. And I wondered whether are you at a point in, are you using some type of assessment strategies that might ensure better success with retention and completion of the program?
Middle school or college? Would you be talking about the high school, middle school, or college level, or all of the above?
I was thinking particularly the college level.
Okay, this is Dale Arnold. So your question was whether or not we're doing any assessments around retention of students that are in college. Typically, we're looking at, on the front end, before they get to college, what are those indicators which would give us an idea that the person would be a success. We have staff in GVRA that follow along with students throughout their college career, working with them on ensuring that they are meeting the expectations of the curriculum and the classes that they're taking each year. And so, you know, the counselors and the other staff are intimately involved through a communicative relationship via email, telephones, et cetera, while they're in college, just addressing any concerns that they may have.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions for Georgia? Okay. Thank you. Let's turn next to South Dakota. Career Pathways is a strategy under the DEI project, Disability Employment Initiative project. And we're turning to Miranda.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Yes, so retention issues. You know, it's interesting, the last conversation we all had just the day before, Dave and I had come back from our site visit with South Dakota's DEI project. It's a round five project focused on career pathways. And we had met with Western Dakota Tech the day before our call. And Western Dakota Tech is the only technical institute that serves the Western South Dakota region, and it is aligned in working with our DEI project. So Western Dakota Tech offers more than 30 programs in a variety of fields, including business and computers, construction trades, health services, legal and public services, manufacturing and mechanical trades, and science and technology. And it was a really dynamic meeting with our DEI project staff, their Department of Labor and Regulation staff in South Dakota, and Dave and myself, who are there providing support and technical assistance We support all of the DEI projects across the country. Dave is the new TA liaison with South Dakota, and I had formerly worked with them before that. So we have an ongoing, long relationship with them, even though they are a fairly new grantee. They had a round two as well. So they have some really great established relationships. But Western Dakota Tech is fairly is new to this type of partnership. One of the first things that Western Dakota Tech, and I'm going to share one issue and strategy that we came up with, and it's very much in progress. And then Dave is going to be sharing the next issue and strategy that is already in play and beginning. So we're kind of leading up to the good stuff. But it's interesting because one of the issues that Western Dakota Tech brought up to us was they identified that retention of students in their career pathways programs is an ongoing issue due to South Dakota's low unemployment rate, which is approximately 3%. And apparently what is happening is that employers are targeting recruitment of students once they've achieved early levels of certification and accreditation to fill their labor needs of entry-level positions. So this really pulls those career pathways candidates and students off the career pathway and leaves the training provider with reduced class sizes and graduation rates, et cetera. So that had been identified as an issue, and it's not something that I had heard earlier in today's presentation. So it was very interesting. It's always great to get on site and work with folks and understand, and these are issues, you know, across the spectrum. But one possible strategy that we had explored with the DEI project and the Department of Labor and Relations staff and Western Dakota Tech was and we're just beginning to explore this. So this is in mid race, you know, it's in the middle of things. We don't have outcomes yet. We'll keep you posted. But we'd explored having the DEI project and the workforce system provide some ongoing support to employers filling these low-level positions through a rotation of job shares of full-time positions that could be turned into apprenticeships and work-based learning experiences with potentially, you know, two career pathways, candidates or students, and those could be individuals with and or without disabilities in the same program at the same level who would work part-time in that full-time position while moving through the career pathway program. So that is one thing we had felt some excitement about, and, you know, we just talked to them about this recently. They're still working through a lot of different issues, but they are going to be pursuing that, and we'll get back to you. It is an interesting new angle, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, and we'll definitely keep you posted. So I'm going to hand it over now for Dave Mayer, who's fairly new to our team, but also he is our DEI career pathways subject matter expert on our team. And for those of you on the call, he came to us from working with our California DEI projects, including our Round 5 California DEI project, which was also focused on career pathways. And he's the new TA liaison for South Dakota. And I know you'll be interested in hearing what he has to share. So Dave, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Miranda. I appreciate it. Good morning and good afternoon, everybody, depending on where you are. I'm really, really excited to be here and really happy to be able to share some of the wonderful strategies and ideas and concepts that are coming out of South Dakota. Alluding to what Miranda was talking about, the opportunity for South Dakota Department of Labor and Regulations to make connections with some of the smaller employers is really exciting. They have a great relationship with a lot of the larger corporations and employers in the western state. But this is going to give them an opportunity to really ramp up that relationship with businesses there, too. So I'm really excited about some of the potential opportunities that are going to come out of that strategy from Western Dakota Tech. But the second issue and something that they're working on right now, and I think this really speaks to exactly what we've been sharing, definitely the project in Onondaga. Did I pronounce it correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Do I get bonus points? Okay, great. And what Jay was talking about, you know, has to do with the assistance that's needed for students who arrive with any type of additional challenge or support need, obviously including those with disabilities and those who experience challenges while in their course of study, or achieving academic and personal success in support of retention and graduation goals and outcomes in Career Pathways programs that they are already running at Western Dakota Tech. So the strategy that Western Dakota Tech has come up with is very similar to what we've been talking about, but in specific, they're calling these student success coaches. And it's open to all students. I know that's something that Onondaga was talking about, that it is open to anybody who's available. Or who's in need of this program. The strategy is to flag anybody who's coming in with already identified support needs, as well as providing an easy-to-use information system strategy for staff, educators, and other partners to flag those issues that arise during training, whether it may be absenteeism or performance, could have to do with a poor high school GPA, or if they've had other types of college or technical experience, a GPA that was poor in that area, whether it be non-traditional students such as older students or first-generation students. Any of these are all taken care of, and they're flagged, and the intervention and support from success coaches begins as soon as the flags go up. So the project is working in coordination with these student success coaches, and they're working with the special services of Black Hills, who's one of the main contractors with the South Dakota DEI, to support that retention of individuals with disabilities in the Career Pathways programs through a collaborative partnership. And they're utilizing success coaches as just a part of the DEI integrated resource team approach. And the IRT process, are most people familiar with the IRT, or should I talk a little bit about that?
I think it'd be good, Dave. Just walk people through it. It would be good.
Sounds good, Michael. So integrated resource team comes from the, obviously first from the Disability Program Navigator programs, which preceded the DEI projects. And it is the strategy that within each, for each individual who, with challenges who comes into the job center, they are met with assessment, they go through the process, they do an IEP or an ILP, and an individual learning plan or an individual employment plan. They are met with, or they're connected with active resource coordination, so the resources that they need to be successful in the process. And from that active resource coordination, the team is created from partners in the community that will assist that individual in being successful in their job goals. And and one of the most important parts that active resource coordination and the integrated resource team is that the individual has an employment goal at the end of the line. So that's a little bit more about that. But Western Dakota Tech actually received a grant from a private philanthropic foundation in South Dakota. They originally, for the last, I believe, 5 years, have had two success coaches on staff working at the Student Success Center that they have on campus. And just recently, we're able to hire 4 new success coaches. So right now, they have 5 full-time and 1 part-time success coach. And what they utilize is a system. It's in their MIS system. And of course, we know that MIS systems are proprietary depending on who actually is the maker of the facilitator of the MIS system. But their system has a retention module built in that allows student support staff to plug in parameters that historically lead to risks for retention. And that's what I was talking about earlier, some of those risks or those flags that arise during training, such as GPA, non-traditional students, first-generation students, and, of course, students with disabilities. So this is their process. They actually work with people from the gate. In fact, when somebody initially is enrolled into Western Dakota Tech, they personally invite each person in to talk to the student success team and meet with a student success coach if they choose to do that. and they continuously are able to, on a daily basis, take a look and see where those flags are coming up. So as they're each individual is assigned a student success coach, whether or not the student actually utilizes it, the relationship has already been started and can be successful in that capacity because they've started a relationship from the very beginning. So we're really excited about this. You know, one of the things that the folks at Western Dakota Tech said was at first when they started using the MIS system, they were kind of shooting in the dark, and they were kind of trying to kind of figure out. It wasn't preemptive. It was kind of trying to figure it out after the fact what was going to work. And from the information and from the experience that they've had, they've been able to, they consider to have a much better take on what those preemptive categories are that's going to help them to flag those students that come in that are going, you know, possibly have some challenges and might have some issues around retention. So we're really excited once again to get more more outcomes and more feedback. And the folks at Western Dakota Tech said that they would be more than willing to share any information with anybody on the call who would be interested in talking to them. So you can let me know. You have my information on the last slide. If you'd like to get a hold of somebody there, I can forward that information to you.
Great. Anyone with questions of Miranda or Dave about what South Dakota is doing, how they're doing it? Okay. And just to open more broadly from the presentations we've had from the OCC experience, the Georgia current efforts, and the South Dakota experience, does anyone want to raise additional either challenges to be identified to add to what we've certainly heard about here, or what are emerging as promising strategies for inclusive career pathways with a focus on retention? And anyone with a comment or additional question? Quiet group today.
You know, I'm wondering, Michael, this is Miranda. I'm wondering if Dave might chime in on this too. I'm looking back at slide 5 where you've got your non-academic factors. And one of the things we heard in South Dakota from a variety of folks was that, and I don't see it on here, is the support from the individual's community versus, you know, not just perceived connectedness to a college and peers and what have you. Although, I mean, I guess that could be the flip side of it, but it could be the opposite side of a poll of if folks are coming out of communities that are not supportive of them pursuing career pathways and what have you. And Dave, I don't know if you want to chime in here at all, but we heard a little bit about that in terms of the tribal populations in South Dakota. So just throw that out there.
That has a lot to do definitely with the first generation student, you know, the person who has family who has never seen anybody go to college, even start college, let alone finish college. And some of the things that go along with families not wanting change, that could definitely be something that could throw a huge wrench in the equation when somebody really does want to fight their way out of poverty and get to a place where they can become self-sufficient. So we definitely heard that, and that is a big part of the Native American community up in South Dakota. And they're working, getting into relationship with the education folks at the reservations, and you know, hoping that some more best practices, more you know, more models, more opportunities avail themselves that they can share with other folks. Know that it is something that's real, and hope that that's something that can be over that can be you know, worked on, and that change will be tremendous when it comes.
I'll just jump in there to say, Miranda, it's a really good point, and one of the things that I know that Georgia is working on with their program is involving parents and families more, and they're also working with the COSIS Family Foundation as a part of their program, and I think part of that is driven by the same issue that you're bringing up, that their community, their family, their network that they had prior to the academic community that they're about to have is also a really important one. And if you don't have the supportiveness in your personal life, it can make it a lot more challenging.
You know, if there are more resources or more information we could learn about what others are doing around addressing that issue, since it wasn't identified here, maybe we could do that in a future or as a part of a future discussion we're having here. Because it'd be great to hear what others are doing, how they're addressing that, and I'd be interested in that anyway.
You bet.
For traditional and non-traditional support systems, definitely.
Okay. I know we keep these very compact to an hour. I'm not moving slides, but certainly please do send to Mira any recommendations for additional members that might join this group, as well as your suggestions in terms of additional resources that we can place online to be shared with others in the group. We each time have been picking a different topic. One thing that has happened since our last COP is the final rules have come out, have been at least, I don't know that they've been published yet in the Federal Register, but they've been pre-published by both RSA and Employment and Training Administration at Department of Labor. It's interesting on career pathways, although there were many commenters suggesting more detailed guidance of what exactly do the federal agencies want, you know, what exactly must it look like? The response that came back really was that they didn't want to be so prescriptive. They recognize that it's a combination. This is in the law itself, a combination of rigorous and high quality education training and other services, which is what we've been talking about today, that make up a career pathway. And they suggest that although there may be further guidance and technical assistance down the road, they really wanted the different agencies engaged at a state and local level and all the partnering organizations, community colleges and technical schools and others, adult education, to have sufficient flexibility, and their exact quote is to be proactive and innovative in developing career pathways. So I think that's really, really a strong statement of there isn't a career pathway. You don't either get it right or you don't get it right, but I think in the descriptions and the details you've provided today is it's filling in that picture, and I think we're going to all continue to learn from each other. Is there any suggestion for a focus topic for next time? Our next call, these are every 2 months, the fourth Thursday of the month, 12 to 1 Eastern time, is September 22nd. Any suggested topic for the next call?
This is Dale in Georgia. Could possibly we discuss in the near future or in the future alternative career pathways and in the community and maybe of out of school youth strategy, getting them back either into school or into a GED program through a local adult education agency.
Both are great. They do. I think they relate to each other. There's no question. The final rules echoing or reflecting the law as passed by Congress puts, of course, for youth the major emphasis on out-of-school youth as a priority. Which includes youth with disabilities, I think, and not only a priority, but focused funding. I think that would be pretty interesting. And alternative career pathways is certainly a complementary topic and I think would be interesting because related to alternative career pathways does it in offering up some additional opportunities, does it eventually take someone back into what we've been discussing over the last couple of months and like the projects at OCC, the more traditional career pathway in terms of multiple certification programs, courses, and things of that sort with the very important provision of support services that have been discussed today. How do people feel about that? Willing to try to tackle that for next time?
This is Mike with Nebraska VR. That sounds like a good topic.
Okay. All right.
This is Helga with Kentucky.
Yep. Okay.
This is Helga with Kentucky. I think that sounds great.
All right. Well, let's do it. I see we're a minute or two over time, but we'll take that up. If you, we'll probably come back to all of you in preparing for that call, trying to gather information on what you're doing regarding, how do you pull in the out-of-school youth, particularly youth with disabilities? Are you have some strategies in place, and then how do we build these alternative career pathways? Will be our focus. So put it on your calendars, September 22nd, noon to 1 o'clock Eastern time, and we'll talk with you next then. So thanks everyone for joining. Mira, anything further?
Thank you, everyone from Georgia.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it. All right. Take care.